Yep, there you are. And then Chris. Chris, can you unmute yourself?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Right.
So, Amanda, if you would like to introduce this and set this up, then we can get started.
Yes, yeah, I wanted to just read a quick brief on step two, and it's out of the Al-Anon Family Group's Classic Edition. This is the first piece of Al-Anon literature that Lois Wilson wrote. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Because my thinking was distorted and my nerves overwrought, I held fears and attitudes that certainly were not sane. Finally, I realised that I too had to be restored to sanity, and that only by having faith in God, in AA, in my husband and myself could this come about. And I'd like to introduce Chris O from the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, Australia, and she's going to start us off with step two. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Mandy. Thanks, everyone. It's good to be here. I am Chris, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Yeah, and as Mandy mentioned, I live on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, and we're living up to our name today. Okay, thanks, Nick. I'll take my earrings out. I'm getting messages about my earrings making noises. Yeah, so we're living up to our name today. It's the middle of winter here, and it's about 23 degrees, and there's literally not a cloud in the sky. So not that that'll stop me, you know, not having a good day. But, yeah, I'm very grateful to be here. It's an honour to be asked to speak at this. So my home group is here on the Sunshine Coast in Nambour. It's Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. and it's a Steps, Traditions and Concepts meeting. And that we've started that meeting 4 or 5 years ago now. We are online at the moment, and you will find details of how to get to that meeting on the Al-Anon, Australian Al-Anon website. So if anyone wants to join us on a Wednesday, you're very welcome. So yeah, I'm speaking on step two today. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I didn't know I was insane before I came into Al-Anon, and I didn't even know I had a problem, really. Now I know I was blessed to be born into a family that was affected by alcoholism, but I certainly didn't think that in the early days. I say blessed today because that's brought me on this path that I'm on, which has been, you know, the most amazing journey I could have ever dreamed of. And, you know, I shudder to think of my life without Al-Anon today. But, you know, even though I was born into a family affected by alcoholism, I didn't know that that's what the problem was. I knew growing up there was some pretty major dysfunction going on. There was a lot of suicides and, you know, just unhappy family members. And I knew I was pretty unhappy. I always felt very sort of separate from, very different from everyone else. I never seemed to be able to, I often talk about I was like the duck, you know. Looked like I had it together on the outside, growing up, you know, with grades at school and that kind of thing. But, you know, I had no emotional sobriety on the inside, that's for sure. And, you know what, even though I didn't realize what the problem was, you know, I grew up with a family with, you know, two alcoholic grandparents. You know, obviously my parents then were, you know, adult children. I had alcoholic, you know, step parents and uncles and aunties and cousins, and, you know, coming into Al-Anon, so I came into Al-Anon, because I, you know, subsequently married an alcoholic, but I can remember, back then, that was 2005, I used to feel embarrassed to say, you know, that, cause he was sober in AA, and I used to think, they're going to kick me out because he's not actually drinking. And then gradually I realized there's a lot of alcoholics in my life. And, But I never knew that that's what the problem was. You know, I definitely found life pretty hard going, growing up. Relationships especially were challenging for me. You know, I'd go through a breakup and, you know, I'd be on my knees. And I'd see other people that could just break up with someone and go, he wasn't really nice anyway, and I'd just move on, and I couldn't. I recognise now some pretty codependent behaviours, like even just play dates when I was a kid. You know, I never wanted them to leave. You know, I'd always find the reasons, you know, ring your mum and see if you can stay longer. And I couldn't, you know, I could never say goodbye to anyone. I was just so codependent and so looking for what was missing in me in another person and, you know, never finding that and always so disappointed. So I grew up in Adelaide, which is south of here. And it is cold down there, and there's a few people from Adelaide on this call today, I know. And so, you know, I did the geographical as well. You know, it's not just for the AAs, that's for sure. You know, after, you know, I did the big, I'm out of here. I was always out of here. I was always ending relationships, changing jobs. I was always out of here. I was uncomfortable in my own skin, and I thought it was that job, that boss, that boyfriend, that mum, whatever. I always just thought it was, you know, someone else, not me. That was the problem. So when I was 30, went through another breakup, and I was always going through breakups. All my friends were getting married and having babies, and I just could not seem to hold my life together to that level. So I moved to Darwin, which is even further north of here, but I'm going to have a whole fresh start. And, you know, within, I think, a week of landing in Darwin, I met someone. Oh, this is great. And I remember you run about our sixth date, I think, and he said, you know, I've got something I need to tell you. And he had this sort of, you know, sweaty sheen on his forehead, and I thought, oh no, he's gay or he's married, which is he? And I really like this guy. And he said, you know, I'm an alcoholic. And I said, oh, right. You know, still at that point, no clue how much I've been surrounded by alcoholics my whole life. You know, if I'd known that, you know, I might have managed it differently. But I said, really, you don't even drink? And he goes, no, I'm sober in AA. And I said, okay, how long have you been sober for? And he said, a while. And a couple months later, I was dating him, and I found out that actually when we met, he was 17 days sober, days. So pretty new in his sobriety. And, of course, I married him, as you do, and married that one. But what I know now, then that was a, you know, pretty difficult marriage for sure. But what I know now is that, you know, I didn't get sick, or my problems didn't start when I married an alcoholic. You know, I look back now in reflection, and I can see that the problems in me, they were there way before he came along. And, I married an alcoholic because of my, where my thinking already was. It wasn't because of him. And that was quite a revelation when I saw that. So, I was only been dating him for about a year, and he suggested Al-Anon. And, I know now that we often, you know, get recommended to come in here by AAs. I guess he must have seen something in me that he thought I needed. But you know, for that, my first 10 years in the program, and I've heard it this morning already on this session this weekend. You know, I was doing one reading a week, and no steps and no sponsor, and no shift in me, and no higher power of God in my life. You know, that's for sure. So I'm still running my life on my will. And you know, things didn't get better, they got worse. You know, and I've realized now that's a dangerous place for me to be, you know, thinking I have a program and I don't. You know, I'd share in meetings about, you know, steps I'd never done. And, you know, I really just thought that reading them out off that banner, that was kind of doing them. Yeah, I'll read that one, come to believe, sure, next. But actually I came in really as an atheist. I didn't think about it much, at best agnostic, but probably more like just never, didn't even look at that. Thankfully I didn't scare me, the God thing on the wall. Coming into that. So, you know, just life just trucked along, and I had, you know, we had two sons together, and I guess the turning point for me was when my youngest son was four, he went into hospital for a pretty simple procedure. He was getting a tonsillectomy and that type of thing. And it really went pear-shaped, and he had to get transferred to another hospital, and they're about to put a nasal gastric feeding tube in. And, you know, I really didn't know if we were bringing him home. And that, which was probably still the worst experience of my life, also the best experience of my life, because that brought me a level of desperation I hadn't had until then. I think God went, here, I have an alcoholic family, you know, that's not going to cut it. Here, there's an alcoholic husband, no? Okay, there's this. And, finally I got, to a level of desperation where I was ready to hear a message of depth and weight, that I'm sure must have crossed my path in all my years in Al-Anon. I went to a meeting and, I heard a message of, I'll never forget that meeting, and that this person who then became my sponsor was talking about God and trusting and relying on God. And I thought, well, I like the idea of trusting and relying on something. That's not me. And I asked that person to sponsor me. I think I followed her out to the car park and that began, you know, that was 2015, I think. And that finally began my real my real journey of recovery in Al-Anon. Up until then, I tried a lot of things, you know, counselors, and I knew there was something not quite right. Even though I was pointing the finger at everybody else, deep down I knew there was really something going on with me. I tried hypnosis, so many counselors, and so much controlling, that's for sure. You know, I would try and control where I worked and what relationship I was in, and nothing worked. I wanted to be a better person. I wanted to do better. I wanted to be better. And, even I used to sit in Al-Anon meetings and I'd hear people talk about trusting and relying on God, and I'd hear about recovery, but I thought, I don't know how to get from where I am in emotional pain, feeling like I would destruct, and I sort of stumble from one emotional crisis to the next. That was my life, really. Like, I was either feeling awful or, you know, excruciatingly awful. I never knew what feeling serenity felt like. I couldn't even imagine that. I used to look at other people and think, wow, they look pretty confident. They look pretty serene. And then I started seeing people looking like that in meetings. And I just thought, and they'd share their story. And, you know, I could relate to their story. They had lots of emotional pain, growing up in a family affected by alcoholism. And now they're like this. But how do I get from where I am to where you are? It just didn't make the connection of those 12 steps on the wall. Finally I started doing the steps, and, you know, I didn't have any faith when I came into that second step, but I had a profound enough step one experience that I was willing to believe. And that's what I came into step two with, doubt and prejudice, for sure. That first time, it gets easier now. I've done the steps a few times, but, I didn't have any belief or faith, and, it helped when it was described to me that all I need in step two is a willingness. I don't believe in step two. And I say that now to sponsees, like, it doesn't happen in step two. We come to believe. And for me, that coming to believe was doing all the other steps that come behind it. I just need the willingness in step two. I had enough pain to be willing. So, that certainly helped me, and it certainly helped me by seeing that, a real lack of power, that was my dilemma. You know, I was homeschooling my boys for a couple of years, and, I was a pretty, I was a loving mum, but I would also be angry at them in a heartbeat. And, homeschooling them was a whole new realm, of anger, you know, and I would, they wouldn't do what I wanted them to do, you know, I'm in control, and they wouldn't do it. And I was screaming in their faces. I scared them. I know I did that. They were scared of me. I'd see that look of fear. And, you know, I put them to bed at night, and, I'd feel full of remorse, and, oh my God, what am I doing to these kids? This isn't who I want to be. And I'd have tears running down my face, and I'd look at them asleep, and I'd think, I promise that mummy won't do this to you tomorrow. I promise I won't do it to you tomorrow. But I didn't have the power to stop. You know, the next morning, they'd do one thing, and I'd be, at them again. And, I really got to see, and that happened over and over again. And I just thought, God, you know, I'm going crazy here. And what I know now is that, you know, I don't have the power to stop. And, I need a power greater than me for that. And, so that, you know, that got me the willingness to look at this work, in a pretty serious way. And, it was a relief when I got to step two to definitely hear I only needed the willingness. And, you know, I didn't have to keep trying to live life, trying to work it out on my own. I used to, feel like, everyone else is in the cruise ship, partying, and I'm out in the ocean swimming along on my own, just, scrambling on my own, because I was, right? And now I know that when I believe in a higher power, and not just believe in it, but act like it, I've got to act like it. And, there's a step three decision that comes after this, and then all the actions that we take. now today I'm in the cruise ship with everybody else most of the time. I've actually had an experience in the last couple of weeks where I've been back out swimming in the ocean, wondering why life's tough, you know, and I've got to see that, when life gets hard going for me, it's not about what anyone else has done or said. It's me out there thinking, you know, pushing God out and trying to live life on my will. So yeah, you know, before recovery, I was not just angry at my boys. You know, I'd be angry at shop assistants, trying to think all the amends I did, you know, Centrelink workers, people on the road who weren't driving as fast enough, you know, everything kind of upset me. You know, I'm grateful today to say that that's really sort of not the case for me so much today, you know, that, recovery has brought me the serenity I never knew how to get. And you know, life's pretty good most of the time these days. And that controlling, I can tell when I'm back in my self-will, when my controlling starts. It's, you know, it's fear, it's controlling thoughts, it's controlling actions. And you know, now I know that controlling is but a symptom, you know, and that the real problem is my selfishness, and that's driven by my fears. And, you know, and I've really got to see that, you know, there really only is fear or love. And I remember hearing that in an Al-Anon meeting, you know, that, you know, with, you know, without fear, there can't be love. Or with fear, you know, those things can't exist together. So if I'm in fear, I'm not loving anyone. I am looking after me. I go into full selfishness, self-preservation. It's all about looking after me. And when I'm in, you know, I'm in a loving place, and for me that's compassion, which is God's love that comes through, you know, comes from God through me. The love I need to be compassionate and show up even on the rough days, and, you know, people saying a narky comment at work, people cut me off on the road, the stuff that used to just drive me nuts. When I can come, bring love to those situations and compassion, maybe they're in more of a hurry than me, maybe that person's just having a bad day, I need God for that. Fear I can do on my own. I don't need God for that. But you know, if I really want to be in a place of love, I need a whole lot of God for that. And that's, some of them muted. Am I unmuted? Can you hear me now? Maybe I've unmuted. That fears are always in the future. You know, I used to think that I was really, you know, being attacked and I had to defend myself. When I got to see that even just my fears are just driven by a lack of faith. You know, I love read an analogy once about, you know, a little girl who's in the plane, and, you know, the air hostess comes to wake her up and says, you know, put your seatbelt on. We're coming into some turbulence. And this little girl says, you know, is Dad flying the plane? And her dad's the pilot. And she says, yeah, Dad's flying the plane. And she says, it's fine, and goes back to sleep, you know, and just feeling safe and protected. And that's how I need to be. If I can live my life like that and go, you know, let God fly the plane, I know I feel safe and protected then. And I need to take the actions to do that. You know, I need to do this work, stay free of resentments. And that means writing inventory whenever I need to do that. It means, you know, doing the disciplines of this program. You know, this higher power and coming to believe in a higher power, I had no idea how to get from atheism to that. But I know now that it's actually very clear, you know, it's laid out for us in a very clear way. I just do those actions, and, you know, that comes true for me. So, you know, the worst thing for me to be doing, I know today, is to be, you know, charging down that aisle and, you know, busting into the cockpit and taking over the, whatever it is you're still playing with, steering wheel. You know, if I start doing that, things aren't going to go well. And there's a lot of evidence for that, you know, that, best I stay back in coach and, you know, let God fly the plane. You know, and that's all good in principle, but in a practical way, you know, I need to use all the spiritual principles of this program. You know, this is about step two, but we have traditions and concepts as well. And in my home group and in a few of the groups meetings I'm in a week, we study the steps, traditions and concepts, and they're all the guidebook for life I never had, you know. You know, how to be respectful, how to be self-supporting, you know, what is unity? How do I try to bring unity into my life? And, you know, what's interdependence? Because, you know, I can be codependent and I can be, you know, too independent and I'll do it all my way. And, you know, anonymity, I don't need to know everything about everybody, and what's the principles over personality, as I heard that mentioned in the last speaker. All those things are great principles to live by, but, you know, they weren't even in my sort of radar. You know, so today I do the actions to you know, live a God-centered life. And not always. Some days I don't do that, and the evidence becomes pretty clear pretty quickly. And I'll just I realize I'm gonna get a couple minutes left, Mandy, so I'll just wrap it up. But I'll just talk about how it is today. So 2 years ago that marriage ended. My husband decided he didn't want to be married anymore. And you know, without this program that would have ended badly. It would have been revenge and hatred, and you know, we've really been able to, we've got two boys that we're co-parenting, and they're 9 and 11 now. And, you know, that divorce is probably one of the things I'm, most proud of. We're kind to each other. And my boys have got to see that it's, you know, you can end a relationship respectfully. We still do things together. My former mother-in-law is actually staying here tomorrow night. Her husband passed away recently. And she's coming with me tomorrow night. And, you know, we still have family meetings, and we, you know, the boys really get to see what love and respect looks like. I've got a new partner from 9 months ago, and he's met my ex-husband, former husband a few times. My boys get to see those two men shaking hands and having a conversation. And, you know, today, you know, it's progress, not perfection, that's for sure, for me. But even, you know, I hear this now on my bit, and it's true for me. My worst day today is, you know, something I would have ripped my arm off to have had 10 years ago. I don't lose my temper at shop assistants anymore. I'm a calm driver. And my boys have a loving, present mum today. You know, and, you know, all is well when I trust God and let him fly the plane. So, that's it for me. Thanks for letting me share. We've got 20 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing on step two from the Sunshine Coast in Australia. Well done. Next I want to call Tanya from Adelaide in South Australia. And I know I haven't got your destination correct, Tanya. But would you like to unmute and share? Let me find Tanya.
Yeah, hi.
Are you there, Tanya?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right now. I am indeed. I'd just like to say good day from Aldinga, South Australia. That's about 70 kilometres south of Adelaide on the Fleurieu Peninsula, and it's a really cold, wintry day. I'm watching Yvonne fanning herself, and I'm here, like, sitting on top of a log fire. It's really cold. So when I was asked a couple of weeks ago, I was actually rung by Mandy. little did she know that I was sleeping from a night shift. And she just said to me, "It's God calling." And I went, "Oh my God, okay. What does she want me to do?" And it was to share, you know, here today. And I was like, you know, my honest self is always when I'm woken up, I can actually have a phone conversation in my sleep. People ring me up and I will be honest. And so I just automatically said, "Yeah, sure, I can do that." When I woke up and went, "Oh my God, did I do that?" oh my God, okay, I can do this. I can do this, you know. And I do remember Manny turning around and saying to me, you know, you are going to pray your ass off for the next couple of weeks. And that's definitely what I've done to be able to share today, because I would actually say I'm quite an introvert. And to be online is quite confronting, but it's an honour to be able to share with my Al-Anon family, because Al-Anon is really special and has definitely given me life. For me, my history, it's in my DNA, the disease. Of alcoholism. I grew up very isolated with five siblings, all sisters, and I had one parent that drank and the other parent that acted quite bizarre, very controlling, and I was quite naive. I remember that. I remember going to high school and thinking everybody was so much more grown up than me. Because I had been isolated. I can remember being in church and thinking that there's more. I just knew there was more than what I was listening to. So, of course, as a teenager, you know, I did have the influence of being in what they call public school here in Australia. And it's very easy to get in the wrong crowd, especially if you come from a dysfunctional background like I did. And I got in the wrong crowd and I was... found excitement and fun. And that's something that wasn't happening in my home life as a child. It was very quiet. You could hear a pin drop. There was never any music or anything. So it was very different for me. Well, in amongst all that, of course, I met my husband, my first husband, I'll say that. We courted for many years before we got married. And, you know, like, I seen the dysfunction, but I couldn't stop myself. I'd probably experienced what I'd experienced in my childhood, I experienced in the first 5 years of knowing my husband to be, except that I'd never seen, court cases or anything like that, which I experienced. And I just thought, oh, that'll be fine. I'll just love him. You know, it'll be fine. I'll do better than what my mum and dad did. I'll be able to give my family, my children, a better life. You know, I know that's probably was the hardest thing for me, was that I didn't know. And that's what was the part of the insanity that I could see. When I came to the program, but it didn't stop there. I mean, I was married, early 20s, had three beautiful children and before I was 30, and, we had done geographics, we'd owned businesses, we'd built homes, we'd sold them, we'd renovated homes and sold them, and the geographic took me to another state on the eastern seaboard of Australia, away from my family. And I realised the night where I just wanted to break glass. I wanted to break windows. I was that angry. I was that frustrated with my married life. And I just knew deep down there was something happening in our marriage. But you know, I can honestly say I worshipped the ground that my husband walked on, and I just couldn't bear the thought that maybe we weren't going to work out. However, there was a lot of abuse, so I ended up moving into another bedroom with our youngest child. And it was the night that I went to a parent-teacher interview, and I came home and I found our oldest child hiding in the wardrobe away from his father, terrified, and the two younger daughters were hiding underneath the covers. And I thought, what in the hell's happened here? And I just knew, that I'd done no better than what had happened in my own childhood, and that it wasn't about, whether it be my father, whether it be my husband or whatever. I just knew that my thinking was distorted. But what really is, looking back at it, I can actually see that what brought me into the program was my own anger. Because my first husband turned around and said, "You've got the problem, you know." And I was like, "No, I don't. No, I'll prove you wrong." And so I actually came through the doors of Al-Anon, and I haven't left. Took 6 meetings, and I just felt at home. They became my family. And I was going 5 meetings a week, and I was starting to feel a little bit saner, so I thought. When I look back at it, I just think, oh, my God, how did we ever survive? But I realised today that it was through a power that was greater than myself. And that journey needed to happen, you know, like it says, I actually had to come to first. And it didn't stop there, because my first husband and I separated, and I was quite an emotional wreck, like in all relationships I've discovered. I can become quite an emotional wreck. And I met my second husband actually in an Al-Anon meeting. And I thought, yay, I've got it. You know, like, he's in the program, I'm in the program. Do you know what? I realized that I actually needed to work the program even more. Because he was always one step ahead of me in knowing what the program was about. You know, I couldn't tell him what to do. Funny enough that. But you know, like, it was like I needed to have everything, you know, all my ducks all lined up in a row, basically, for myself to be feeling okay. We ended up moving back here to my hometown and down on the Flurio on a little island. And there was no drinking in our household, but there was a hell of a lot of crazy thinking and a hell of a lot of crazy actions. And I'm so grateful, because at the same time there was we still went to Al-Anon. I went to Al-Anon and he went to the other fellowship, and my children went to Alateen. There was a really large Alateen meeting down in Victor Harbour at the time. And I just thought, you know, there's still something not quite right. And there was a member that kept saying to me, just keep coming back. You'll get it. And I'm thinking, I'm not getting it. I'm just not getting this. You know, and we'd go to conferences, and I'd pick up little snippets of things like, you've just got to keep doing the rest of the steps. And it's like, well, I don't know whether I've even really got step one. You know, I know that I'm powerless and that my life was definitely unmanageable. But really what happened was, in my second marriage, it became very unmanageable one night. I actually had a member in the group offered to sponsor me, and I'm so grateful she knows that person who it is. And I end up at her house one night because my second husband threatened to kill me. And I basically was I jumped out of the car as he was driving past my sponsor's place. And I raced inside and I said, he's going to kill the children. He's going out. And we lived down a rural property. He's going to go out and kill the children. And, I mean, this was a person that had been, we'd both been in the program for many years, and that just showed that the insanity that was happening. And it was that night where I'm grateful that my senior-year-old son had his license and he was able to get in contact with him, and they came off the property. And to be truthfully honest, my second husband didn't actually go out to the property. He seeked refuge with other fellowship members. And but it was my 16-year-old son stood at the other side of the table and said, "Mum, haven't you had enough? Haven't you had enough of trying everything? Why can't you just let go?" And you know, that just resonated with me, and I knew that I needed to let go of everything that I thought was supposed to be. And because everything that I thought was supposed to be was actually driven by my thinking, which was insane. It was insane. I wasn't capable of being, I just couldn't do parenting. Some days I'd be okay with it. Other days I'd just want to stay underneath the covers. And some days my children would get on the school bus, and other days I'd be chasing the school bus all the way, which was a 40-minute drive to get them to school. Other days I'd just say, let's have a PJ day. You know, and I just knew that life was crazy. For me, though, life got better when I got into action, when I actually became humble enough and honest enough to say, my life is unmanageable and I'm desperate. I'm so desperate. And there were people that had faith in me when I didn't even have any faith in myself whatsoever, and they loved me. And those people loved me more than what I feel my own biological family did, and that was my Al-Anon family. And they, in the beginning, were the power greater than myself. Today I realise that's very different. They were like the stepping stone. They had the faith for me when I didn't have it in myself. And today, a power greater than myself is God that gives me good orderly direction. And I say that to newcomers all the time. You know, if you're frightened of the word God on the wall, it's just that good orderly direction. And it's something I didn't have until probably about 11 years ago now. And I'd been in the program for 10 years before that. And I'm just so grateful, because there's been times since then where the insanities come back, always to do around relationships. And it's where I am very quick to think that, I don't know, that the insidiousness of the disease is how I will put another human being thinking that, you know, they've got all the answers, that they're going to look after me. I won't have to be as responsible. You know, very childlike. I revert back to that childish stuff. And I can't get rid of that on my own. And so I had to come to slowly. And so hence the reason why I've spoken about that, because I did come to very slowly. And my biggest, I'd say my biggest rock bottom, and I'm sure there'll be more rock bottoms again. However, it happened a couple of years ago, and I had a the person I was going out with at the time, I was doing some pretty insane stuff, and I was feeling really jealous and uncomfortable, and it actually took me to the place of where I was when I first came into the program, but took me back further, and it showed me that this disease progresses regardless of how long you've been in the program. Again, it was my Al-Anon sisters that were there for me and guided me and had faith and nurtured me. And, you know, they're not my higher power, but my higher power sent them to me, and I really believe that. Today, life is very different. It floors me how that relationship actually rekindled. And it's not through my power, not through, I wouldn't have had any idea that it was going to happen. However, it's been an amazing journey, and it's only because I've got honest and I've been willing to know that my partners, or the partner in my life, is not responsible for my thinking, is not responsible for my well-being. I need to be responsible, and I can't do that because of the dysfunction that I've had. And that the ingrainment, that DNA that's there about the disease. But I'm so grateful because Al-Anon's given me the opportunity and to have a more balanced life. And due to that part of where I came to again, and I came to believe that there was a power greater than anything that I ever thought of, I had to let go of everything all over again, totally let go. And you know what amazes me is every time I totally let go, the miracle happens. And it was in the last incidents for me was believing, I can remember it happening, you know, believing that I'll never be alone again. I can be in a relationship and or not be in a relationship, but my most important relationship is with my higher power that's greater than myself, greater than my thinking, that brings me that good orderly direction. You know, because alcoholism isn't going to go away. It's going to be wherever I am. But today I just know that there is a power greater than my thinking, thank God. Because it's just, it can go off. I mean, if you know what I've gone through, working up to coming on and speaking, it's just been incredible. I can laugh at myself. But that's the insanity. That's how quickly it can creep in. And I'm just so grateful that I just know that if I just keep putting one foot in front of the other and I've seen like been shared, you know, that, we had a cereal commercial here in Australia that, you know, like, it was, just right. Cereal, and it's like, I want what she's got, you know, somebody said across the aisle in an aeroplane, and it's like, that's how it was for me. I want what I see in other people, but I can't take what they've got. It's finding it deep down inside me, that, you know, when I surrender, all my nutty thinking, all my absurd thinking of I think I know, which is normally when I get into trouble, is when I think I know that this is going to work or that's going to work. That's the peculiar twist for me that sets my disease running. Now, I don't need an active alcoholic or a recovering alcoholic in my life because I've got me. And today, because of the program, I have an amazing relationship with my children and my 5 grandchildren. I sat across the table at the person, the sponsor, you know, years ago and said, I can't do anything. You know, I'd hurt my back at work. And today those miracles do happen because I started to believe. And today I actually lived my dream. I said when I was 4 years old I wanted to be a midwife. I went back and studied and I got my 2 bachelor degrees and I work as a midwife. So the reason why I said that was because one of my grandchildren I actually had the honour in delivering and that could have never happened. That could have never happened if I'd never stepped in through the rooms of Al-Anon and trusted in what other people were telling me along the way. So I'm truly, truly grateful and I'm just wondering what time I've got left. If somebody was going to put my timer on and I didn't, is somebody else just able to tell me?
You're done. You did well. 20 minutes.
Thank you. I'm blessed. Thank you very much. It's been wonderful listening to others.
Thank you, Tanya. Thank you, Tanya from South Australia. Thanks for sharing. Great share.